Welcome to the Casserole of Nonsense with Chris, Scott, and Casey.
That's right. This is the Casserole of Nonsense, and we're on the 18th green at Augusta National. Putting for the Masters. Okay, not really. We're talking about golf in this episode.
No.
Speed of ball.
No. The Cinderella story. It's all this time.
At Augusta. With 7 iron, like 250 yards. It's in the hole. You can't tell I love Caddyshack.
Oh, gosh. Wow. Yeah, the one sport that you can do one thing good the entire day and it'll bring you back because you might be able to do it twice the next day.
Yeah.
It's golf. I've never been so happy and so sad all at one moment.
It has a way.
The only addiction that may be more expensive than cocaine.
It's not a lie.
Yeah, the truth is too real.
I mean, seriously. That's not a lot. I think that I may have gotten that, if I'm not mistaken, from Alice Cooper.
That wouldn't shock me.
I believe he said he took up golf to quit or to avoid doing drugs.
Hey.
Or drinking one. Don't quote me on that, but I think that is that I've actually heard him say that because, and I probably should look it up, and I'm not going to. But that would be fun. That would be fun. I would think to play golf with Alice Cooper.
Yeah, I would.
I know we all play. I know we all play golf. I know we've all played golf together. Well, you guys played and I just, spent most of the time looking for my ball in the woods.
But, Stored my lock.
But how much golf do you guys actually watch? Do you watch all the main tournaments?
I watch all the majors that I can. And I don't watch every tournament, all four rounds, but especially on the weekend of a golf tournament, I will watch, and especially the majors.
I'm the same way. And it kind of depends. Like if it's a final round on Sunday and one of my favorite players is near the top of the leaderboard, I'll watch. But I mean, social media, you can keep up with it too easily.
Yeah. I'm forbidden to watch.
Forbidden.
It is the one thing that my wife, I can watch all the, for quote a previous episode, I can watch all the boobs and explosions I want. within reason, okay? on normal TV, let's put it that way. But Annette just not a big fan of golf on TV. She thinks it's the most boring thing. No, that's tennis. As far as watching a sport or bowling. she has no qualm with me playing, but it's not something. If I want to watch the Masters, I got to be somewhere else.
I'll say this. In terms of watching, if it's just a normal tournament, it could be kind of boring. But if you have a lot of the line, if you're at the back nine at Augusta at the Masters, I don't think there's any other sport that has quite the drama that golf does during that time.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Golf seems to have taken a turn, though, as far as viewership. It used to be you had four or five big names that kept it afloat. You had your Nicklaus. You had your Lee Trevino and – a lot of names in golf that people would follow, and it was about the sport. But then Tiger hit, and I think an argument can be made that Tiger was the best thing that happened to golf. But I think also an argument could be made that he was so dominant that it could have just been like one of the worst things that happened to the sport. What are your guys' thoughts?
I don't disagree with that because golf did not develop the image of anybody not Tiger during that time. Phil was a big name, but he's getting older up in years too. They did a terrible job for about 10 years of not showcasing anybody but Tiger Woods, and it's finally catching up with him.
Yep. Agreed.
I think it suffered along the lines. I think NASCAR, in some respects, the same thing happened, but not on as grand a scale as golf. I think you hit the nail right on the head, Casey, with it was all Tiger, and if he wasn't in it, then people tended to turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had a few promising guys, you know, few younger horses that looked like they were going to come up and threaten, but nobody could keep up with him. He was just so dominant. And then those guys, they're, I don't know, for one reason or another, their games went by the wayside. And all of a sudden, then when Tiger started to show his age, then it kind of left a hole for a little while.
I don't know if this neat last gasp that Tiger is doing. I mean, Tiger really realistically only has 5 to 6 more years where he's going to be competitive with these other guys, based on his injuries, based on just the ability of these younger guys coming up. This last gasp, people are expecting Tiger to, some people are, to go ahead of Nicklaus in majors. There's no way that's going to happen. There's no way he's going to reel off 5 majors. And if that doesn't happen, I don't know where golf's going to go in terms of Brooks Koepka. Great golfer, but he's not a draw.
Yeah.
Like Tiger Woods. These guys are not Tiger Woods, and I think we can't expect them to be Tiger Woods. And that's going to be a hard sell for my generation that grew up. He was golf. Well, after he leaves, well, I mean, Brooks, he's great, but I don't want to sit down on a Sunday and watch him for 4 hours. He's just boring. So he could be I think you're right. He was a great thing. But this is going to pay bad dividends on the back end.
I think though, as far as a competition level, golf is in pretty good hands right now. There's a group of golfers who are all competing for major championships. They're all right there together. Maybe it's Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas. One guy that I think really needs to major badly is Ricky Fowler.
Yes.
There's one you could probably hang your hat on if he was able to win a major and get a little bit more notoriety because, you know, he does a lot of commercials and stuff like that. And he has more charisma than a lot of players. But as far as the competitiveness of golf right now, we're probably in an era where it's more competitive at the top than it's ever been. Because there's really not one or two dominant players. There's more like 10 or 12 who on any given weekend can win.
Do you think that the influx of European players and more European players getting better, players getting better across the globe, Japan, China, those natures, has had an effect, positive or negative, either way, on golf coverage or at least marketing in the sport?
I think in the United States, negatively, it's kind of hurt the American players. But when you get in the situation with the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup, it's great competition.
Yes.
Now, I'll go back to Y.E. Yang. Now, you mentioned about Tiger's dominance, Casey. I think when Y.E. Yang knocked off Tiger at the PGA Championship a few years ago, that's the moment when I think when this generation of golfers realized that he was not invincible. And I think it was a turning point for where we are now.
It was a turning point definitely for his career and his personal life too, because he kind of used that same mentality in his personal life too. Like, I'm untouchable. I'm Tiger Woods. Well, I think his entire life unraveled with one swing of the club at Hazeltine by YEA. And mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right. That is the turning point for everything.
Definitely the Rocky Drago moment when Rocky cut Drago in Rocky IV. And all of a sudden, Tiger bleeds, and he bleeds red blood.
And it showed an entire young generation of golfers that it's possible.
It is. You know, you talk the European game. Well, part of the problem now is that a lot of the European Tour does not want its players to play full-time on the PGA Tour. So there's not a lot of exposure right now for these European players on the PGA Tour. They're not going to go to the John Deere Classic because the European Tour is not letting them.
Yep.
They're saying you can play in the Scottish Open, the Irish Open, if you go over there and play in these events. And that's hurting, I guess, the marketing side for these European players over here, because the European Tour is really tight-fisted with these players.
Yeah. Rory McIlroy is taking a hard-line stand against the European Tour as far as deciding to play on the PGA Tour over being in Europe. And he was the biggest name to say, hey, I'm not falling for that. You know, the opportunities, the money, the prestige is on the PGA Tour. And that's where he knew he had to go.
Now, another question is, you know, when you talk about Tiger, is when he started his decline, it seemed like the average viewer started to tune out. How much of that probably is the accessibility factor? Because it went back to Tiger being, you know, for what it's worth, Tiger was almost in everybody. He, you know, because of his, you know, his whatever racial, you know, fan base he had, you know, golf went back to a lot of, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, just white guys.
Yeah.
I mean, in all honesty, do you think that had effect on viewership?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, in those Masters where Tiger came into Augusta injured, didn't play, I didn't watch the two Bubba Watson wins. I didn't watch it. And I'm a golf fan, but I just don't find it, even the majors, as interesting if he's not in the mix. Now, when Jordan Spieth played, I think, 2 years where Tiger didn't participate, I watched those because I thought Jordan Spieth was interesting. I liked him. These other golfers, I just can't invest 4 hours, even at Augusta National on TV, invest 4 hours watching it if Tiger's not involved.
And is that is that as much the media not, and I hate using the term media, but let's just say the golf reporting, is that as much just them not being able to figure out how to market the next guy, or is it really, or was it just kind of lazy? All of a sudden we were expecting to cover everybody the same way, and now Tiger's not there, but we're still trying to, you know, we're not reinventing how to do our coverage.
Yeah. I think a lot of that is, you know, Tiger has had such a vacuum on this sport for, I mean, since Michael Jordan was playing with the Bulls. I mean, that's the 97 run. That is, he's had such a stranglehold on the game. And when he's not there anymore, it's like, well, where do we go from here? We really haven't done a good job marketing these other people. And they're trying, but they're just so far behind right now.
Yeah.
And I think it's the PGA Tour's fault. Plain and simple. Now, the leagues are responsible for marketing themselves, and they don't do a good job of it. And not just because they don't have maybe the superstars, it's because their schedule is so it's so inundated with events that people don't care about. I mean, I'm not watching a tournament from Hilton Head. Most people aren't either. I have to have a reason to watch. And with the PGA Tour having 40, 50-something events a year, Who's going to keep up with all of that unless you're an absolute diehard PGA Tour fan?
Or a degenerate gambler.
Right. And that's another point, too. I mean, people can poo-poo it all you want to, but the proliferation of gambling in these states that are starting to adopt it now is going to make things even more – it's going to make it better for viewership because people are going to watch if they've got money on it.
Yeah. You know, one of the events that, and I think that it goes to the point of how it's marketed, where they do a decent job marketing, they can do a better job marketing, are these pro-am events.
Yeah.
Where they have the professionals and then you have either, you know, actors or, you know, some kind of celebrity, whether it be a sports star or whatever. It seems to be more accessible or at least a little more fun, a little less stodgy than, you know, your average weekend match.
Yeah, that's definitely true. But now those pro-ams that you talk about, there may be only one or two of those a year. The pro-ams that are usually in every tournament are usually going to be like with CEOs and business bigwigs, you know, people that you're not going to really care about watching.
Yeah.
And the PGA Tour pros are required to play those events too, but some of them may only play 9 holes and skip out.
Right. Well, here's my thinking behind that, because I honestly believe that if you put up regular event, not a Masters, not a PGA Championship, but just one tournament, one weekend tournament of the best golfers, like you usually get during the season, right? Or let's just say you watched, I don't know, a foursome of the NFL stars play, NFL quarterbacks. I guarantee you more people watch Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady play a round of golf than will watch the professionals.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
And that is, I think, in and of itself is the marketing problem that golf has got to figure out.
Yeah.
How do they make their stars as popular as other sports?
Well, one thing that's happening behind the scenes right now, this league that some Saudi investors are trying to put together, really, they want to take the top people in golf, get them off the PGA Tour, put them on the league, and play a style like you're seeing. PGA Tour, a lot of the top golfers don't want to play 50 events, and they don't play 50 events. Mm. So this new golf league is giving them the chance to play in a limited schedule, much higher purses. You don't have to worry about missing the cut anymore. You don't have to worry about any of that. And it's a true threat to golf, because if their stars, if their top line stars go to this league, that's going to be a tough deal for the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Do you think the 4-day schedule is a problem? Would golf be better if you limited the number of I've always been a proponent of in the role into NASCAR a little bit of splitting it up into East Coast, West Coast, and then you have your All-Star game midseason, and then you have your championship race where you take the top out of each side, East and West, and put them in a championship race at the end, more or less a tournament form of competition. I've always wondered if that wouldn't be better for golf, and then you eliminated, instead of playing 4 days at a course, you only played 2.
Yeah. LPGA Tour has a 3-day schedule instead of a 4-day schedule. So you could cut a day, but the golf purists wouldn't like that. But you want to keep the viewers entertained, and that's what runs these checks, you're going to make some changes, especially in the post-Tiger era.
Right.
Is the 4-day – you think the 4 days is – does I imagine that'll change the way some scores are, because by the 4th day, you know that course pretty well.
Yes.
So I don't know, because I mean, weather can obviously play a big role.
Oh, sure.
I mean, like if you get in a major, say the Open Championship. I mean, if you play at St. Andrews or you play at Troon, where just a change in wind direction can send scores plummeting. You have the wind blowing the wrong direction, and the winning score might be 5 over par.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are some places that are more affected by weather than others. It just depends really on the course, I think. Whether you play 54 or 72 holes, I mean, maybe one day makes a difference. I don't know. But maybe though, if you have like a match play format instead for some tournaments. I mean, you have the World Golf Championship match play championship. It's a 64 player bracket with all the best golfers in the world scheduled to compete. Maybe you have one or two more events like that during the year. I think that might be a better option.
Maybe.
Because I like match play personally, because I mean, even though a lot of matches never make it to the 18th hole, they're usually fairly close for most of the match, instead of seeing one guy hack it around the course and shooting 10 over par while somebody else is tearing it up at 5 yeah. under. It's a different animal. And you actually give more players a chance to be competitive. And you could see Tiger Woods get knocked out in the second round of a tournament if he has a few bad holes.
Yeah.
And then you can hear the CBS executives crying in the background.
This is true, too. Yeah. But a lot of the executives or the networks don't like match play because you end up with a Gary Woodland against maybe a Davis Love III for your championship match, and they think people don't want to see that, even though it could create one heck of a match. You've lost a lot of casual viewers.
Or the flip side of that is you could see Tiger Woods go against McIlroy for 18 holes, too, and the viewership goes wild. So there's a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah.
The standard format is a lot more accustomed to the natural flow. But if you, like you said, if you get Gary Woodland versus Davis Love III, not many people to be tuning in for
right.
that mess.
But the one thing you do get with match play that you cannot get with stroke play is that in match play, you will see every shot.
Yes.
In stroke play, they're going around the course so much to other different players, and you might see five or six shots from a certain player who's not having a good day. But you get Tiger up there, and you're going to see all 72 shots he makes, mm-hmm. even the 1 foot tap ins. I think that's another problem that the PGA Tour has had. They don't cover the sport well enough when it's in action. There's too much focus on certain holes or certain players, and now they've got to find a way to pull casual viewers in earlier.
My favorite thing is when Tiger is going up a leaderboard, he's making a charge, and there's like six or seven people with the same score. They'll always put his name on top of the leaderboard. These other people have the same score, mm-hmm. and then there's probably more rationale to put them on top of him.
Yeah.
The effect of for 20 years, he's been the only person they've really marketed at the level that they have. And now, sooner rather than later, they're going to be paying the price.
Yep.
Viewership and dollars.
I agree. We're kind of up against the break. So we'll continue this discussion on the other side, and then we'll get into the GOAT list as well. So you're listening to Casserole of Nonsense at the 19th hole, and stay with us. We'll have a beer too.
There you go.
Welcome back to the Casserole of Nonsense Open, where Casey Elrod leads by two shots. Okay, y'all didn't get that one.
About to say that was a dream.
No.
Yeah. So we're continuing the discussion, but from before the break, we talked about the things that I think the PGA Tour can do better. But let's shift gears and go into some of our individual golf memories. When did you start playing? Casey, why don't you start us off?
Started playing when I was five, out in the yard, hitting balls around. I used to have a draw. I used to have a pretty draw. And somewhere along the way, I just have a slice now. But I've always enjoyed going out playing with my dad. He always let me tag along if he was in a golf scramble, and he would let me pretend like I was playing with him. I've never had a hole in one. Probably the best course I've ever played with some courses in Myrtle Beach on the ocean. I've never played the big time courses, but I really do enjoy going and playing golf. It's a lot of fun. A lot of people don't like it. A lot of people think it's boring, but I've always had a good time, and it's a great stress reliever. It can be a whole lot of fun. If you got a good scramble going with a bunch of people of your ability, a whole lot of fun.
I started playing probably in high school, ninth grade. I took instructions on the at the Atlanta Athletic Club. So I had a little bit of training. I was bad then. I'm bad now. But I would play the Highlands course over at the Atlanta Athletic Club, where they played the 86 PGA Championship. I actually worked at selling programs. Almost got spiked by Jack Nicklaus. Not his fault. He did a good job of clearing kids out in front of him, but everybody's trying to get signatures. Anyway, but then when I went off to college, I said 86. I was gone in 86. This had to be 82, 83 PGA Championship. 83. Anyway, when I went off to college, I didn't play. I did know too many people. So I played softball then for probably a good, I guess, 20 years and didn't get back into golf. Realized I was just as bad as I ever was. still have a wicked slice, so much so that I believe I'm the only person who ever hit a ball, struck a ball going forwards that actually wound up backwards without hitting a tree. I have that bad of a slice. You know, it's still fun to me. You know, the challenge is to get that one good shot. I stopped making a goal of, you know, it being about the score and more about me making two shots around that I could be proud of. If I can make two shots or two putts around that I can be proud of, then the next time I might try for three, but I'm not disappointed. Yeah. I'm not a professional. To me, it's more about the guys I'm playing with or the gals that I'm be playing with and, you know, having a good time. You know, again, I still care because I don't want to be the weak sister out there, which I always am. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, they say in poker, if you can't figure out who the sucker is at the table, it's you. I have no illusions. In a foursome, I am the weakest link.
Well, I started playing right before high school. Played a little bit my last 2 years of high school. Wasn't very good. In fact, my district tournament, I actually ran out of golf balls before I finished and had to borrow one from a fellow competitor to actually finish the round, which I don't tell that story often for that reason.
You mean you didn't stuff any golf balls in your shoes or anything like that?
I did not, no. No, I had an old hand-me-down bag, old leather bag. It was one strapper to carry around, which was not fun. I felt more like a caddy on the PGA Tour carrying around a tour player's bag when I was first starting out. But I actually worked at a golf course for several years and got to the point where I could shoot even par for 18 holes. Now I went back to college and that ended because I couldn't find a job at a golf course where I was going to school. So my game suffered greatly after that. I've got one hole in one of my career. I've shot even par for 18 holes once. Not a whole lot else other than that. I like playing golf courses with good views. I like to actually, you know, take in the scenery. That's kind of important to me. So I don't play as much as I used to. I wish I had changed that, but sometimes getting older and adulting is kind of getting in the way of it. But
sure.
I still love the game. Still love to watch. Still love to play. Just don't get
too much. What's the worst course that either of you all have played at before?
Oh, jeez. Ironwood in Cookeville.
Yes. That was going to be mine, too.
Oh, that story about the district tournament where I lost all the balls happened at Ironwood.
Well, that's understandable because a person could lose a whole bag of balls at Ironwood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
We talk about goat tracks. That's one.
It is not operational anymore.
Really?
Not. No, it's been closed down for about 3 years. Some people are trying to buy it and redo it. Last I heard.
Good luck.
It's just good luck. I love Gainesboro, of course.
I love that one too. But, I mean, it's been shut down for several years too.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the local courses around this area have shut down. Green Hills, Gainesboro, Hunter's Point.
Yeah. Hunter's Point, it's not even there anymore. It's all a subdivision now.
Really? Hunter's Point is gone?
It's gone. Completely.
Wow. Been the last course I played. The worst course that I played is probably that course between Carthage and Hartsville.
It's Green gone.
Hills, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably as much of a goat track as I've played. I was trying to think of a close second, but I'm really struggling to come up with one. I didn't mind Ironwood. too much. I think that was probably the worst course. But you know what? The worst course playing golf still beats the best day at work any day.
Agreed.
That's right.
Agreed. So we've talked about goat tracks. Now let's look at the goat list.
Let's talk about some nice ones.
Yeah, some good tracks.
The goat list. These are the best courses in the U.S. according to GolfDigest.com, their list of America's 100 greatest golf courses. And I'm gonna put these in descending order. But again, this is what somebody else thought. We're gonna, from what we've seen, what we watched, what we've experienced, we are going to rank these as far as we're concerned. So these are the ones that really matter. So from going up from number 9, because evidently I didn't do 10, Sand Hills Golf Course in Mullen, Nebraska. Number 8 is the National Golf Links of America in Southampton, New York. Number 7 is Pebble Beach, California. Number 6, Marion Point Golf Course in Ardmore, Pennsylvania. Number 5 is Oakmont Golf Course in Oakmont, Pennsylvania. Number 4 is Shinnecock Hills in Southampton, New York. Number 3, Cypress Point Country Club in Pebble Beach, California. Number 2, Augusta National in Augusta, Georgia. And the number 1, according to GolfDigest.com, is Pine Valley in Pine Valley, New Jersey.
Okay. So how do you want to go about this, Mr. Scott? Do you want to just talk about each one of them, or do you want to do like a bracket style on these, or how would you like
Chris, how do you think? Should we take them down? Or
I think we just rebuild like this list from 9 to 1.
All right, I'm good with that.
And
where should we start?
We'll start at number 9.
Okay.
Now, three of the courses on this list have not hosted major championships. Sand Hills is one of those. National Golf Links is the other. And Pine Valley is the third on that list that has not hosted a major. In fact, Pine Valley doesn't even host a PGA Tour event.
That's right. It's impossible to get spectators on the site at Pine Valley. That's the reason why they never had one.
Pine Valley takes this ranking to heart, and I think almost too much so, because up until like maybe last year, you couldn't even really get images of the course. They're so secretive about it. Maybe it's a great place to play. I don't know. Casey, what say you?
When you read about Pine Valley, some golf courses, including Augusta National, have throwaway holes where it's kind of like, let's put an easy hole out here just so the score can be increased or whatever. Pine Valley, from what I've heard from Brendan Chamblee and the other people that have played Pine Valley, is every single hole at Pine Valley is a masterpiece. Most of them, almost all of them, have bunkers. It's a masterpiece. It's a very long course. It also ranks as one of the more difficult courses, too. From what I've read about Pine Valley, there is not a weak hole on the course, and that is unbelievable how a course can hold up like that and not have one throwaway hole or two. The problem with Pine Valley is they're very secretive, even more so than Augusta National, and it's impossible to get spectators on site at this course. So we're never going to see a PGA Tour event here just because you can't get spectators on site. Spectators can't get from hole to hole because of the layout and the construction of the course. So that is pretty much what I know about Pine Valley.
Yeah, that's pretty much what anybody knows about Pine Valley. And I'm going to nominate it for the number 9 spot just because of that.
Yes.
Okay, so we're gonna knock Pine Valley down to number 9 just because of the accessibility factor and the fact of it's so secretive. I mean, it is a beautiful course. Yeah. There is a drone flyover, and you know, from what I've seen, it's a gorgeous course. But if you can't get to it, if you can't, you know, showcase it, then I think that I agree, it knocks it down.
Yeah.
And speaking of Sand Hills and the course in Nebraska, good luck getting there, because the closest airport is in Denver, Colorado. there's no way that Sand Hills could ever accommodate a PGA Tour event, because the town of Mullen, Nebraska only has 500 people, and the actual golf club can only accommodate 40 people staying on site at the golf course. So Pine Valley and Sand Hills, you can't even get spectators on these courses. And even if you wanted to go to Sand Hills, you got to go to Denver, Colorado on an airplane just to even get there.
Yep. But at least we know a little more about Sand Hills than we do Pine Valley. So for that reason, I'm okay with it at number eight.
I'm okay with eight.
Yeah, I think that it stays at eight. And I, if you look at the flyover, it's really kind of strange, the layout. And you have all this yellowish prairie field grass, and then the holes just stick out, you know, from overhead, the green. It almost looks artificial. It's really kind of a strange – it's beautiful layout, lots of hills, lots of side bunkers. I would never stand a chance on this course.
Chris, you're going to bring more than just one thing of balls on this course, I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to have, you know, Titleist just supply me with a continuous, you know, one for every stroke. And then whatever, you know, 36 times eight is, because I top out at eight strokes a hole.
I think Chris and I are going to agree on the next two. You might agree with us too, Burton. But I'm on the next two on this list. I want to put Cypress Point and National Golf Links of Southampton next, just because National Golf Links of Southampton, if you look into it, is voted the snootiest golf course in the entire world. It's in the Hamptons, and also it's almost right next to Shinnecock Hills.
Yeah.
The difference is Shinnecock has had major events. National Golf Links is not. Now there's some great views at this golf course, but it doesn't have the history. It's really hard to get to, and it's a bunch of snobs.
Yeah.
Same at Cypress Point. Cypress Point is close to Pebble Beach. Mm-hmm. There's not any big tour events at Cypress Point,
it does get in the rotation of the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, though.
Oh, okay.
They do use it for half of the field there, because the Pro-Am at Pebble Beach is a four-day Pro-Am. Pros and the amateurs play all 4 days. There's no cut line there. So they have to use both courses to accommodate all the players.
It doesn't have any major pedigree, though,
right,
as the main Pebble Beach course or the other courses we're going to talk about.
Yeah, so we'll put it this way. If you're not in contention at the program at Pebble Beach, you get to play Cypress Point on Sunday, and that's how you know you're not doing too well.
But I'm going to make a little bit of argument, because Cypress Point, as far as, you know, depending on what you want and what you're looking to get out of course, number seven at Cypress Point may be the most beautiful course ever. One of the most beautiful holes.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, to Chris's point about liking to play in interesting or courses or beautiful courses, you just don't get a whole lot more beautiful. And trust me, if you are going to spend all your time looking for, you know, golf balls instead of actually being able to play, the scenery actually makes a difference. and not to mention that there's so much water around that I don't have to spend a whole lot of time looking, because I know that ball's gone. Now, I don't have to go looking in the weeds, because it wound up in the ocean. You know, unless Flipper is going to help a guy out, you know.
Hmm.
But I'll defer to that. Okay, so I am going to say, because of the snootiness factor, National Golf Links at seven, Cypress Point at six.
This is where it gets tough.
Yeah,
it's starting to break. Yeah, it's really starting to break down a little bit here, guys. What do you think would be the number five here?
I'm thinking Marion, and here's why. Marion went when the U.S. Open was there in 2013 when Justin Rose won. Marion was one of the shortest courses that the U.S. Open has been on in the modern era in golf, and there was talk that, how low are the scores going to go at Marion? Is it going to be 10 under, 15 under? Is it going to break Tiger's record there at Pebble Beach? Well, some of these courses hold their own just because of the layout of the course, the length of the course, which Marion doesn't have in this case. But Marion is different because it's got the wicker baskets instead of the pin flags. And this caused a lot of chaos when the pros were trying to land the balls around the hole. There's a danger that the golf ball could go inside one of these baskets. So Marion, even though they do that because it's a local thing there in the area, but it's kind of gimmicky. I don't really like the baskets. So I don't want to hold Marion here at six just because of that. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I have no problem with that. That was kind of my thought too, that Marion would be. Well, that should be number five now.
Yeah, yeah.
Marion would be at five, but yeah.
At five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have an argument against it.
We actually move it up a bit from, well, at least one spot, I think, from Golf Digest. But yeah, I'm good with that assessment.
The course does have some history. Ben Hogan came back from his automobile wreck here. Bobby Jones got the grand slam at Marion. So Marion has a history behind. And it's kind of amazing that this course is about 6,700 yards, which is about 500 or 600 yards less than the normal U.S. Open here lately. And the scores for Justin Rose, I think, was around par.
Yeah,
even a couple of years ago. So Marion, even though it's a shorter course, show that it can have some teeth if you do it the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, leave it to the USGA to trick the course up enough to play defense. Which they also did with Oakmont, and I'm going to put Oakmont at number four.
Now
Oakmont has some nice scenery. There's nothing. It's mesmerizing when you see the church pew bunkers.
Yes,
that's a really key feature of that course. Oakmont is really tricky. There's a lot. I mean, even number one, when you're going downhill, if you push anything to the right, you're re-teeing.
Yep.
Because the way that course is set up, you've got a lot of stuff along the boundary of the property.
And with Oakmont, it's interesting because the greens go the opposite way from the fairway.
Yeah.
And it's unlike anything.
They slope from front to back.
Because of the natural flow of this golf course. Just makes it, if you try to play this on a Tiger Woods game, you're never going, it's hard to shoot par on easy just because it's so against the normal flow of how you land a ball on the putting surface.
Yeah.
But I would have Oakmont number one, and here's why. Oakmont has stood the test of time. It's one of the oldest courses that they play championship golf on. It's got the church pews. It's been host to 9 U.S. Opens, which is the record. No course has held more U.S. Opens than Oakmont. The lowest score was 5 under par from Johnny Miller back in 73. 5 under par is the lowest score. If you look at the people that have won at Oakmont, Sam Snead, Ben Hogan, Jack Nicklaus, Johnny Miller, Dustin Johnson, the most recent one, Bobby Jones, Gene Saracen. So the big dogs perform under the biggest conditions and the best courses. And even though it doesn't have the scenery like Pebble Beach or Augusta or someplace like that, or even Shinnecock, I would put Oakmont number one just for me, just because of the history and the toughness of this course.
I actually am. These four are really, really tough. I mean, trust me, I would love to play on any of the other three we're going to talk about, or this one. The church pew bunkers are incredible and frightening and gorgeous all at one time. This course is, looks like it would be just a memory to play. That being said, so are the others.
Hard.
It is really, really difficult. I have no problem with Oakmont at number four. It just really kind of depends on where you guys go with one, two, and three. And I understand because my idea of number one is actually going to be probably different than your guys' idea of number one.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about
park it at let's park it at four right now and put a pin in it.
Yeah.
And then see how we feel about the others. And we may actually bring it up.
Yeah.
Because we may end up agreeing with you once we discuss the other three.
We'll mark that. We'll mark that ball.
Yeah. There you go. Good idea.
We have Pebble, Shinnecock, Augusta, and
that's it. It's those three.
That's it. Let's talk Pebble Beach, which is next on the list.
Pebble is beautiful. It's probably the most scenic course that you know about, mm-hmm. that you see on TV. The problem I have with Pebble, though, is the course relative to par. Modern players are destroying this course. They're shooting 15 under, or I think Gary Whitlam shot 13 or 14 under last year. The modern game is taking Pebble. Especially even putting the course under U.S. Open conditions, they're taking this course apart now just because it's not that long. It has four par fives. It has the scenic. It has the ocean. It has the Monterey Peninsula. But the modern game is taking this course apart.
I agree to an extent with that. I think the USGA were faced with some decisions about how difficult to make the course play, because they could have went a lot farther than they did.
Yeah.
And I think the conditions were kind of conducive to more scoring last year as well. You get a day where you get the wind coming in on the Monterey Peninsula, and look out, because Pebble can still have teeth.
Yep.
It does.
Pebble can still have a ton of teeth, and that rough can still be gnarly.
I think a lot of the reason why it was easy, especially last year, was because the USGA remembered what happened at Chambers Bay.
Yeah.
Where they're like, they almost destroyed a brand new golf course on these greens because they about ruined the greens. And mm-hmm. they could have done that and kept scores around par at Pebble, but they're not, even the USGA doesn't have the balls to ruin Pebble Beach.
No.
So they didn't go there.
It is one of the iconic courses. In all of golf, it's a beautiful course. Yeah, I get the as far as professionals on there. You do have to take that into account when you're talking about best courses, because you know the difficulty level of the course does matter. It's really tough. I don't think it's one. I really don't think it's number one, but I have no problem with it at three.
I'd put it above Shinnecock is what I would do. I'd put Shinnecock at three, and I would put Pebble at two.
I'm okay with that.
Wow. See, Shinnecock to me is, it's the history there. You know, Vanderbilt coming over and basically – getting a Scottish pro and course architect to build the club in the Hamptons. I know it's a snooty area, but that is just an absolutely gorgeous place to play. Not that I've ever played it, but I've seen it on TV. Boy, when we get into these, there's a lot of personal preference, isn't there?
Yeah. There really is. I mean, the thing with Shinnecock for me is it's more of a links style course.
Yeah.
And I don't think that does as well here in the States as it would in Europe. I mean,
that's a good point. That's a fair point.
Your U.S. Opens tend to look like the Open Championship when they were played at Shinnecock.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I'll agree with that. In fact, I wouldn't, because of that. That is a very excellent point that I did not consider. Because of that, I would consider putting it down at four and moving Oakmont up to three.
Okay.
But
I can deal with that too.
I know where this is going for number one, and I do agree with it. I try to make the argument that Augusta National was not the best, but the more I think about it,
how can you not?
You can't go that route.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, truthfully, if again, a lot of personal preference into it. I think Pebble is a beautiful, beautiful course. And I would, on an everyday basis, I would probably play there, want to play there more.
And for $600 again.
But Augusta, the fact that you can't play on it, it's a private course.
You want what you can't have.
Yeah, you got to know somebody, know somebody that knows somebody.
Yeah, I mean, you realize.
Or you have to be in the golf media and get selected on the Monday after the Masters.
It is incredibly exclusive. But the care that they put and the love that they put into that course, they actually manipulate the flora and around there, all the plants that they're blooming at times that are not normal.
Mm-hmm.
So the course looks beautiful year round. You know, and a Bobby Jones designed course.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
so it's got history on history.
And also too, the fact that they were not so uptight about the course that they weren't willing to change it if conditions warranted. They've made some adjustments over the years, and they tried tiger proofing it, but I mean, you couldn't really do that. But they did lengthen some areas and made it a little bit tougher in some way, shape, or form. But it's still a fair course. I mean, and if the conditions are right, you're still going to score well.
Yeah, the weather. If it's a cold April day, or if how we're going to see this course hold up in October, November,
yeah,
is going to be interesting too. Because I think around par could be. Most people think par to 500 par is going to win the Masters. If it's in November.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how it will look on television in November as well.
Yes.
And how many holes, how many golf courses out there that you know of have names for each of the holes?
Yeah.
Many.
I mean, you've got, you know, the Flowering Peach or Magnolia Hole.
Or North.
Yep. We're right up against the break, guys. Let's go back right after this. Hey, we're back with more of golf nonsense. We didn't quite finish the GOAT list, but I think you knew where we were headed with this. We were about to name Augusta National the GOAT for the best course, in more definitely in defiance of what Golf Digest says. But let's finish that conversation real quick. Scott, Augusta National, I mean, we can't get on unless we know a CEO or a commissioner or something like that. I think that kind of adds to the intrigue of everything that course stands for, the tradition, especially surrounding the Masters.
Yeah. Right. Again, as we were talking about during the break, Augusta is an intimidating course. If you actually have to feel like you belong there, I guess. I would be too intimidated. There's no, you know, I'd get up to the first tee and just pick up my ball and just leave. I don't deserve, you know, it's just so intimidating. Do I even really belong there? I say that, but it's one of those ones that I would like to be able to sneak onto at night and play. And so nobody could see me.
So moving on, we have Scott, what's next for us? You got some stuff for us, don't you?
We're going to the quiz show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you guys have already shown a lot of acumen over golf, but let's just see how much you guys know. So we're going to go do quiz show first before I go into my shenanigans. I just figured that this might be a quiz show where one, Casey should know some answers, and two, might actually beat you. So here we go.
All right.
Each question's worth 1 point. If I ask for something specific, you again, I might be able to change the rules. Change at my whim. I am the final expert on this. Okay.
Okay.
So question number one: How long was the longest recorded drive? And I'm going to give a point to the person who is closest.
429.
515.
The longest recorded drive was 515 yards. And Chris, you get an extra point for being freaking accurate or looking it up on the internet.
I didn't look it up. Scouts honor, I did not look it up.
English American pro golfer and kinesiologist expert Michael Hoke Austin is credited with making the longest drive. He drove the ball in the U.S. National Senior Tournament in 74. Okay. So, Chris, you get that one. Casey, right? Question one, you're always already behind the eight ball. Okay.
He's two down after one.
Here's another question. Golf being an excellent workout, according to health and fitness expert website shapefit.com, assuming you walk the course, how many calories will a typical golfer burn per hour?
Let's say 1175.
It's good. It ain't that good. It's 431 calories per hour.
We were hoping.
Casey gets the point.
All right. Off the schneid.
What country has banned new golf courses?
I'm going to say down under.
I'm going to say India.
It is actually China.
Hmm.
However, that hasn't stopped them. They just don't mention they're building a golf course on their on their plans.
Hmm.
Okay. How many golf balls are hit into the water at the 17th hole of the stadium course at Sawgrass each year?
For all four rounds?
Just how many golf balls per year are hit on the 17th hole? This isn't during the tournament.
Oh,
this is
okay.
Total balls.
13,500.
I'm going to say 12,000.
Point goes to Casey. You're way off. 125,000 golf balls are hit into the water at the 17th hole of Stadium Course of Sawgrass wow. each year.
Wow.
Okay. Oh, we're not going to do that. True or false question? Golf balls travel farther on hot days.
True.
True.
Point to both. That is true. Golf balls travel further on hot days because the air is less dense. So it takes a lot less velocity to travel. Okay. Originally, golf balls were made from what?
Wood.
Sheep's intestines.
That is. It is wood, although they did change to leather and chicken or goose feathers. And here's the reason why I couldn't have played golf back in those days. At one single golf ball would cost you $10 to $20.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Okay. Casey, actually, you have taken the lead 4-3. Okay. What? We all know that Alan Shepard performed a one-handed swing with a six iron on the moon. What other sport has been played on the moon?
Football. Throwing a football.
I'm going to say soccer.
You're both incorrect. It was javelin. The javelin throw. Okay, until the invention and popularity of the golf tee, what did golfers play off of?
Sticks.
Dirt.
Point to Chris. I'll allow it. Actually, they played off sand piles they built themselves. Hmm. So they basically built that up. Let's see. How many, percentage-wise, what percentage of golfers have a handicap below 18?
12%.
6.
Casey takes the lead again. With it is 20% of all golfers have a handicap below 18. You know what they call a golfer with a 18 handicap?
Bogey golfer.
That is correct. Okay, tie game. We're getting close to the end, and I have a lot of questions, but we can't do this all day. Well, we could, but people wouldn't want to hear. What is the longest golf hole in the world? I'll give me the country that has the longest golf hole in the world.
South Africa.
Case, did you fall asleep or?
China.
Close. It is Japan. The longest golf hole is the 7th hole of the Sano course at the Satsuki Golf Club in Japan. It measures a whopping 909 yards. What is the youngest? How old is the youngest person to shoot a hole in one?
4.
3.
5. Boy, you guys overestimate those toddlers. 5-year-old Cosby Orr in 1975 in Littleton, Colorado. So he had a little extra help from the air. Huh. I'm going to say that because a 5-year-old hit a hole in one. It's impossible for me to reach the green in 3 shots on a par 3. Okay, the highest course in the world. Where is it?
India.
Switzerland.
It's actually in Morococha, Peru. Okay. Let's go one more question. I'm looking for a good one. Okay. What? There are a lot of celebrities who play golf, but one of them has a special clause in all of his movie contracts that allows him to play golf twice a week while filming.
Joe Pesci.
Bill Murray.
I bet you he does now when he heard about this. It's actually Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh.
Okay. Still trying to get the – we've gone into overtime, extra golf.
Into the playoff.
Into the playoff. Okay. What is the oldest golf course in the world?
St. Andrews.
Yeah, St. Andrews.
Actually, it is, again, according to Guinness Book World Records, it is Musselburgh Links, which originated in 1672. But it is suggested that Mary Queen of Scots played there as early as 1567. Okay. Let me go back up to this one. Who holds the U.S. record for the most World Cup victories? Well, wait a minute. Back up. Yeah. Who holds the world record for the most World Cup victories?
Ernie Els.
Gary Player.
Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus are the most successful. Oh, wait a minute. Let me go back. I should have said U.S. Should have said Americans. Sorry. That one's on me. Deduct a point from me. Oh, good. I'm not playing. Actually, Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus are most successful. America's 6 wins. So I'm looking at – guys, you're running you, – I hate when you do this because you run me out of questions when you're tied. Okay. Where does the word caddy come from? What language?
Comes from English?
I'll say Latin.
It comes from French. The word cadet, it means youngest child, is where the word comes from. Okay, America's first 18-hole golf course was created in what state?
New York.
Massachusetts.
Illinois, Downers Grove. It's a nine, it's still around, but now it's a 9-hole course. Okay. I didn't know this. This is a bonus question. I'll save that one. Okay. Wow, I'm running out of questions. At what age did Tiger Woods have his first hole in one?
6.
7.
Casey wins.
Wow.
6 Almost? Years old. Since then, he's hit another 17. Yeah, Casey, you won.
How about that? Shock the world.
Yeah. Did y'all know that Phil Mickelson was not born left-handed?
Yeah.
That's why I didn't use it, Chris. Okay, here's the fun thing. You guys ready? I know you guys have been teasing you with this, guys. I want you to create a foursome. A golf foursome. And I'm going to give you the people. I want you to create a foursome one at a time out of – so you pick 3 of these guys to be in your team. You ready? These are fictional golfers. So first of all, Happy Gilmore, played by Adam Sandler. Kenny Lee Puckett, played by Randy Quaid in Dead Solid Perfect. Shooter McGavin from Happy Gilmore. Randolph Juneau, Matt Damon. Chubbs Peterson, Carl Weathers from Happy Gilmore. Pat Pemberton, played by Katharine Hepburn from Pat and Mike. Roy McAvoy from Kevin Costner from Tin Cup. Joe Anthony, played by Dean Martin in The Caddy. Ty Webb, played by Chevy Chase in Caddyshack. Hops Masterson, Tiger Woods PGA Tour 2003. Cosmo Kramer, played by Michael Richards from Seinfeld. Al Chervik, Rodney Dangerfield. And Judge Elihu Smales, Ted Knight, Caddyshack, and Casey. Since you won quiz show, you get your first pick.
Give me Judge Snails. Give me Shooter McGavin. Give me.
Whoa. No. You get to pick first. You don't get to pick all.
Oh.
He doesn't know how it works.
Judge Smales.
He takes Judge Smales. He's going to take a cheater right off the bat. Chris.
Oh, on the strength of that, I'm taking Al Chervik.
All right, Casey.
Give me Roy McAvoy.
I got to take Happy Gilmore.
The price is wrong. All right, Casey. You got Kenny Lee Puckett, Shooter McGavin. Huh? Chubbs. Chubbs. He's going to take Chubbs. So there's still Kaylee Puckett, Shooter McGavin, Randolph Juna, Pat Pemberton, Joe Anthony, Ty Webb, Pops Masterson, and Cosmo Kramer left on the board.
Tough choice, but I'm going to take Randolph Juna.
Randolph Juna. So, 1, 2, 3. All right. Casey, your last person.
Shooter.
Shooter. Oh. Okay. All right. All right. Waiting for you, Chris.
Ty Webb.
Yeah, there's no chance that he wasn't going to get picked. Okay, so teeing off on the Highlands course at the Atlanta Athletic Club will be Casey Elrod, Judge Smales, Roy McAvoy, Chubbs Peterson, and Shooter McGavin.
What a force.
Oh, my gosh. You just picked that. So Shooter's going to kick all y'all's butts.
He probably will.
And teeing off on the Riverside course at the Atlanta Athletic Club will be Chris Brooks, Ty Webb, Al Chervik, Randolph Juna, and Happy Gilmore. Somebody's going to die. Now, you get to personally pick, and Chris, you get to start. Your looper, Bagger Vance, Carl Spackler, Harvey Miller, Danny Noonan, Romeo Pissar, that's Cheech Marin and Ten Cup, Tony DeNuzio, that's Scott Combi from Caddyshack. Harvey Miller was Jerry Lewis and the Caddy. So you get Will Smith as Bagger Vance, Carl Spackler, Bill Murray, Harvey Miller, Jerry Lewis, Danny Noonan, Michael O'Keefe, and Romeo Pissar, Cheech Marin, or Tony DeNuzio. Who's your caddy?
This is even more difficult than my last pick, but I'm going to go with Bagger Vance.
Bagger Vance. All right, Casey.
Danny Newman.
Noonan. Yeah, it's pretty wise to leave Spackler there. You'd never get a shot off.
No, he'd be going for those Gophers.
Okay. But I can't believe you left Romeo on the board. But I don't blame you. Bagger Vance would have been my pick, too. Well, there you go. Guys, did you enjoy that exercise?
That was nice. That was good.
I figured that you might like that. I'd sneak in a golf movie. Quickly, which is your favorite golf movie?
Caddyshack.
Ten Cup.
I have to say mine's Caddyshack, probably. But I will give a shout out. Bagger Vance may be it. It's really close, but Caddyshack's a just classic.
Yeah.
But I've yet to see I think about there are some bad golf movies. Caddyshack 2 would be the number for the first one.
We have time to finish One's Gotta Go real quick. Got about 8 minutes to do it, so let's dive right into it. We've got five drivers, we got five players regarded as the best drivers of their generation, and you need one of those to sink a putt to win.
Yeah, and we've got the five are Sam Snead, Arnold Palmer, Greg Norman, John Daly, or Rory McIlroy.
And one's got to go.
And one's got to go.
Well, this is going to be easy for me. Get John Daly the heck out of here. Because he ain't going to sink that putt. He's going to sink a dadgum Diet Coke or a cigarette. He ain't going to sink a putt.
Hey, I think I see John Daly over here in my neighborhood. Hold on just a second. Go tell him about this. He's not going to like that. Hey, John Daly's a major winner. I'd rather have him on there than Greg Norman. Greg Norman was the choker of all chokers.
You know, John Daly, when he was actually stroking the ball really well, actually played pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg Norman, putting just was not his – that's where he choked.
He's a two-time British Open winner, though.
Yeah, but he should have won so many more.
Yeah.
I mean, he really should be known more for his golf performance than his golf shirts. And I like them. I have several. But I always felt bad for him because it always seemed like when it really got tough, he'd lock up. And I know how that feels. Trust me, I've never had that much on the line, but I know how that feels to, you know, have a putt, to have a good, you know, score on a hole and, you know, chunk it, you know, come up short. I'm agreeing with Chris here. I would much rather have John Daly take that putt than Greg Norman.
Yeah.
If I got a hole one putt.
John Daly also was a PGA champion in 91. So I kind of discount putting as much in the Open Championship as I count it for other majors, simply because the conditions are all can obviously affect so much more in the Open Championship than in any other major. And yeah. John Daly won a major where you got to make putts.
Yep,
I agree. Mm-hmm. I've changed my mind. Let's get Greg Norman the heck out of here.
There we go, and we can have some Hooters and some beers over here at the Hermitage.
Oh, you got to respect that.
That's right. He's got everything he wants in one neighborhood. I mean, he owns two golf courses. He's got a Hooters right down the road. He's got all the beer he wants over there. I think he's even parked his RV at the golf course and even lives in it right now.
Yep.
I mean, dude's not worried about it. So I want him in my foursome. But there you have it. So we didn't even touch Sam Snead, Arnold Palmer, or Rory McIlroy even in this discussion. That's the thing.
Well, Arnold Palmer was – his game was pretty solid all around.
Yeah.
I mean, he dominated in his time.
Yeah, so did Sam Snead.
Yeah, but and on top of all that, he developed a delicious drink with lemonade and iced tea.
This is true, too.
Snead, yeah. Those guys were all around good players and didn't, you know, were not choke artists.
Yeah, and McIlroy at the top of his game can really do damage.
Yeah, I mean, Daly for a short, yeah, it was not a long career on top because he kind of self-destructed.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, lived his best life. Just depends on what you want.
You know, depends on how you choose like to look at it.
Yeah, it's exactly how you choose to look at it. I mean, you know, yeah, I could play stodgy golf all my life, or I could hang out with and drink beer and hang out. And, you know, just depends on what you want.
Yep. But that's it. I mean, Greg Norman is the one that's got to go. So.
Yep.
That concludes one heck of a conversation around golf. I hope you weren't bored by it, because we certainly weren't. May all your drives be straight, and may all your putts go in. Thank you for listening to us on the Casserole of Nonsense, and we'll talk to you next time.